ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
North Carolina is heading back to the Final Four, setting up a dream matchup with Duke. And the fairy tale run for St. Peter's comes to an end.
I don't know if you know that Duke and North Carolina have never once played each other in the NCAA tournament, because I did not. It honestly seems impossible that the most hateful feud in college basketball has somehow never made it to the sport's biggest stage. Until now. This weekend, when Coach K's Final Four somehow becomes even more dramatic. So, today, with Duke and Carolina and Kansas and Villanova taking March Madness into its blue period, a semifinal full of both dreams and nightmares, Myron Medcalf tells us how we got here and what comes next. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, March 28th. This is ESPN Daily.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Myron Medcalf, the Final Four is finally upon us. What's your word count like at this point in March?
I think I'm approaching 30,000 words in the last 2 weeks. I mean, it's really, I've written like a book about the NCAA tournament in these 2 weeks.
Yeah, no, that is a biblical level of output almost. And the book that you're describing, I feel like we got to start by just turning to the book of St. Peter here at the top. I mean, like, Myron, should we pour some out for St. Peter's here at the very top? Because it's tough what just happened to them, but I don't know if there has been a run like the one that got them to this game against Carolina.
Yeah, there's nothing we've ever seen that compares to this, not even just in college basketball. I don't know if you could compare this to anything we've seen in sports. And what I was thinking was, as I was watching, you know, the guys who were pretty emotional at the end of that game, what they don't realize yet is 30 years from now, they're still going to be heroes in that community. I mean, they are set for life being attached to St. Peter's and what they did. And it's going to take them some time to realize how special it was. But what an amazing thing they accomplished.
No, I mean, for those who are unfamiliar, this tiny school, Jesuit school in Jersey City, no one had ever made the Elite Eight as a 15 seed, right? And this is a school with, like, budget constraints, man. Like, there are stories that we heard about how, you know, some schools would come by, practice at the gym, shoot a jumper, the rim would fall off, like, the offices would flood. And so what they did, you know, on Sunday night was kind of complete the full version of the Cinderella metaphor, right? Because what happened to them, Myron? What did the University of North Carolina do to tiny, cute St. Peter's?
You know, I think North Carolina is just a different challenge, like the way they spread the floor. You know, they got hot. I also think if you're St. Peter's, what kind of emotions and fatigue have you sort of dealt with? They were able to win a lot of close games in the first 3 rounds. But North Carolina never made it close. And I think that was the big difference between any of the games that they played previously. North Carolina is a team that's just versatile. they give you kind of a different look. But I mean, for St. Peter's to compete, you can't compare it to even anything in college football. Like what they did is just so unique.
Yeah, so the clock strikes midnight. Their carriage turns into a pumpkin. Carolina smashes said pumpkin. They beat them by 20. And Myron, after this game, which was not close really ever, they get an interview with Hubert Davis, the coach of Carolina, post-game, and he begins to cry.
What's bringing you to tears right now?
I'm just so happy for them. I really wanted this for them. I just desperately wanted this for them.
And I'm curious if you could describe why tears there could kind of make sense. What was the trajectory emotionally of Carolina's season to this point?
I remember talking to Hubert before the season, and I said, did you ever have any weird moments like transitioning into being a head coach? And he was like, you know, for the most part, I was ready. I was an assistant for 9 years. But then we took a trip, he said, to Florida. And they played Florida in one of those like closed scrimmage games. And he said, all of a sudden he was sitting at the front of the bus, and it was weird. Like he realized he had never sat at the front of the team bus. You know, he was finally a head coach. You go from there, you add all the new pieces, Brady Manick transferring in from Oklahoma, bringing in some of the returnees they have. And then, you know, you have to put it all together as a coach in your first year as a head coach. So I think it just took Hubert in North Carolina a lot of time. And people doubted them early, and he heard that. And now he's being praised for the way that they're finishing. So I think more than anything, his tears were about the journey to this point, because it wasn't easy. No one would have picked this back in December when they lost to Kentucky by 29 points, but here they are.
Right, and here they are, by the way, as an 8 seed. You know, like, it's not like they are. They didn't enter this tournament a favorite, right? Like, this is a Carolina team that had been scuffling. But what are you seeing from them now, Myron, that makes them, like, a deserving Final Four contender?
Well, I mean, they played some of the best basketball over the last month. I mean, anytime you can beat Duke and Baylor during that stretch and UCLA, it says a lot about you. They play a modern version of the game. I mean, there are times when all five players are on the perimeter. I mean, Hubert Davis doesn't really believe in positions. He's big on the NBA style. They had taken 91 three-pointers in their three previous games before they face St. Peter's. St. Peter's' first three opponents in the NCAA tournament had taken a total of 60. So you're just talking about a whole different challenge with Brady Manick and Caleb Love and just the versatility within that offense. And I also think the confidence matters too. Like if you can beat Duke on Coach K's last home game with Jerry Seinfeld in the building, who are you afraid of?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Myron, it is shocking. I don't know if you knew this as an article of faith. I did not. I did not realize that Duke and Carolina, the matchup we are now assured because Carolina blew out St. Peter's, I did not know that Duke and Carolina had never played ever in the NCAA tournament.
It's amazing. You know, it's amazing that this is where they're meeting too. First time in the NCAA tournament, and they're going to meet in the Final Four. Are you kidding me?
It's absurd.
I mean, who's going to be in the building? I mean, you had 90 plus players at the last home game for Coach K. How many will show up here? How many North Carolina guys are going to show up? It's going to be an amazing event.
And do they ban Jerry Seinfeld this time? Do they decide that he was a jinx? He can no longer sit next to Adam Silver for this.
Hey, Jerry's going to be in that building along with a number of other celebrities, I'm sure, who want to participate in that. I mean, that will be the biggest Final Four game I know I've ever covered in my career, for sure.
Yeah, it's the most storied rivalry in college basketball happening on again. And this is just like, we got to the point, Myron, where it became exhausting to talk about Coach K to now like really energizing, because we're at the point where this is also the last run for that guy. And you happen to be covering Duke in person. Like, you saw them beat Arkansas 78-69, sending Coach K to his 13th and final Final Four, which happens to be, by the way, more than anyone ever. He surpassed John Wooden for the most Final Fours in the men's game ever. What did you see out of Duke against Arkansas?
You know, I mean, the thing about Duke is anytime you're dealing with a young team, it's easier to look at their flaws. And not many young teams have ever won national championships in the one and done era. It's just two. It's Kentucky with Anthony Davis. It's Duke with the three guys they had in 2015. All the other teams that had one and done stars didn't make it. So you're used to these guys struggling. I actually think, and I talked to players about this, losing to North Carolina actually helped this team because there were so many things going on and they heard so many people doubting them. And I think they just came out of that sort of bonding together, us against the world. But the reality is when you get down to it, this is the most talented team in the field. And it was probably the most talented team in America all season. Mm. But now they realize it. Like Paulo Banchero is now impossible to stop. He's shooting. He's hitting threes. He's going into the lane. Mark Williams is this free-flowing seven-footer who's playing over the top of everybody. And then you got all these guards and wings who are just capitalizing off of what they're able to do. Duke just has more talent than everybody else. And maybe that sounds familiar, but that's just what they've been using to get to this point.
And there's this interesting dimension of age to this team, like juxtaposed against their coach, because Coach K, by the way, now might become the oldest coach to win a championship at age 75 by 7 years. Like, it would be far and away the oldest dude to do it. And his team, those guys you mentioned, Myron, like nobody older than 20 years old played 5 minutes against Arkansas. Like, the idea that this particular brew of personalities of youth is coming together, I mean, that is terrifying.
It's amazing. But I also think it speaks to, like, who Coach K is. And I think he's really tried to bond with these guys. I think he's really tried to adapt to the different eras. I mean, I was walking this week in San Francisco at the arena, and he saw me. He said, "Hey, man, I like those shoes. You know, I was wearing some yellow Adidas, and he loved my shoes." And, you know,
wait, Coach K bumps into you on the sidewalk and points out your shoes.
He loves my shoes, loves my shoes. Now, the next day he sees me, and I'm wearing a different pair of shoes, and he goes, "How many shoes do you have?" Like, I think he wants to borrow them, but he didn't want to admit that. But I think he's just, like, more laid back than people realize. We've seen the image of that serious Coach K, and there's still a lot of that. But there's also a guy who I think is just kind of enjoying the game in ways that maybe 20 years ago he was so intense that he didn't enjoy it as much. But he is, to me, at ease going into New Orleans.
Well, he's also pulling out every trick in the book, right? Like, in terms of motivation, man. I mean, there was that moment, and you covered this game too, right, against Texas Tech, where he has everybody, like, during a timeout, like, slap the floor, right? Can you explain that scene as you saw it?
Well, I mean, the guys who did it said it just sort of happened naturally. Like, you know, Coach K slaps the floor a little bit, and then they all just kind of in sync do it together. And it was sort of a passing of the torch moment. You know, they were down at halftime to Texas Tech, and here they are kind of joining the brotherhood. It was ritualistic in a way, the way Coach K described it.
Yeah, I mean, look, slapping the floor for people who are not initiated into that cult, it's kind of like Duke's version of, like, the haka dance,
yes,
that thing that like tribal New Zealanders might do.
Yeah.
And they slap the floor. It's infuriating. It's annoying. It's a caricature, but it is also very sincerely their identity.
It was amazing to see. I mean, it was like, okay, they're here. They're ready, you know, and you could just see the attitude. It was like in that moment, honestly, it felt like they were like, okay, we can win it all. Like we're right here and we can win it all. And I think that was sort of the thing that changed. I think Steph Curry had an impact on those guys too, because they bumped into him at the building. They bumped into him.
Duke's running into you. They're running into Steph Curry. Like, what's going on here in San Francisco?
Well, so Wednesday night, Steph Curry didn't travel with the team. He's rehabbing and he's working out in the practice facility. And that's where these guys did a bunch of media. So there were a couple of players who were kind of just hanging out, doing media, getting ready to head back to the hotel, and Steph Curry walks in and they have a conversation. And Steph Curry told Paulo Banchero and Mark Williams and some of the other guys, you know, not to take this moment for granted. And then Thursday, they walk into the arena and Steph Curry is there fist bumping everybody. You know, he's dapping up everybody. So I think a lot of things have happened this week. And if you hear the guys talk about Steph, they were all in awe. That kind of just got this team ready to prepare for what could be the sixth national championship for Mike Krzyzewski.
Yeah, dude. I mean, the last time I talked to you about Coach K, it was after the Carolina game you alluded to. You know, famously, infamously, Coach K, after the game, they had blown out by Carolina at his last game at Cameron Indoor. Coach K trundles out to midcourt, takes the mic.
This is impromptu by me. I'm sorry about this afternoon. That, no, please, no, please, everyone be quiet. Let me just say, it's unacceptable. Today was unacceptable, but the season has been very acceptable. And
we said it at the time, Myron, that this feels like the scene in the documentary that precedes the championship montage. And it is remarkable that this whole tournament run for Duke has been pretty much on the nose a montage like that.
It's amazing. I mean, whoever's going to make the Coach K movie, they have to be loving this. You know what he said he did after that loss to North Carolina? Because he's also been very reflective. I mean, he's talked a lot about changes he had to make to get this team to this point. But he said he went to his garden. Like, he's a big gardener.
Mm.
And he said he was just hanging out in his garden, kind of thinking about what's next. You know, how does he get this team prepared? And you know, what can he do as a coach to make them better? And you saw this moment against Texas Tech where they switched to a zone early in the second half. Texas Tech doesn't really know what to do with it.
Yes.
But the game's still close late. And these guys all go, Coach K, we got to switch back to man. And he listens to them. Like, that's who he is as a coach now, being willing to adapt and listen to his players.
So Coach K in his garden, you know, tending to the, and there's so many metaphors here, right? He's stopping to smell the roses. He's receiving his flowers, all of this. And like Duke Carolina, I just want you to set it up for people who don't get it, because they have played each other. I'm checking this now. 257 times.
Yeah.
0 times in the NCAA tournament. What does this mean? Preview this for us, Myron. What are we going to see?
I mean, it's you know, Michigan versus Ohio State. It's the Yankees and Red Sox. But when you add the revenge factor that North Carolina spoiled Duke's final home game for Coach K, when you add in the rivalry, which has been the most important rivalry in all of college basketball, you're going to see guys fighting. You know, I think Armando Bacot and Brady Manick and the North Carolina guys are tough.
Yeah.
And they want to prove that that win wasn't a fluke. And I think when you see the Duke guys, you know, they feel like they had an off night and there was a lot going on. But I think they're ready to get revenge as well. You know, I asked Paulo Bencaro yesterday. I said, hey, you know, how are you guys going into this game? And they've tried to stay away from the storyline.
good luck, buddy.
Good luck with that, right? But he said, listen, of course we want to send him out with a national championship. I just think it's going to be the greatest buildup to a Final Four game that's ever happened in my lifetime.
Yep.
And maybe ever.
Yeah, same. I mean, it's crazy that, like, for everybody in this game, right? Like, it's obviously... For Coach K, it's his last dance, right? The stakes there are obvious. But for Hubert Davis, like, it's so funny. That win that they got at Cameron was the highlight. And now even that is in jeopardy, right? Like, you can't... whatever happens in this game changes pretty much everything in terms of how people feel about both Coach K and Hubert Davis individually.
Yeah, I mean, for Hubert Davis to beat Coach K and Duke in the Final Four, he's an automatic legend. Right? Because it would just change, I think, his status to do it on this stage. For Coach K and Duke to beat North Carolina to get to the title game and potentially win it, I mean, you can't make up a better 30 for 30 ending.
No.
You know? It's unimaginable that we're actually getting to this point and we're going to see what I think honestly will be one of the two or three biggest games in the history of college basketball.
Damn. Yeah, I want to call hyperbole police on you, but I completely agree, dude. So after the break, we'll get to the teams on the other side of the Final Four, a couple more brand names that I'm pretty sure you've heard of.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine. Especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Myron, I want to start here by just nodding to what we saw before Miami played Kansas, because we got video from the Miami Hurricanes locker room where Jim Larrañaga, their coach, was self-flopping onto the carpet at age 72 pregame to try and motivate his players. And I hesitate to be cruel about this, but it felt like the team more or less flopped as a result.
Yeah, I mean, I think they had probably peaked. You know, they destroyed Auburn, you know, who had them beating Iowa State to get here. And I think, again, every achievement isn't the same for each school. For some schools, yeah, it's you got to get to a national championship if you're Duke or Kansas. An Elite Eight run in Miami, I mean, they're going to live off that for a very long time. I think they lost to a Kansas team that, in a weird way, even though it's a top seed, has been flying under the radar. Kansas has been destroying people for a month, but no one has really cared because it's more fun to talk about Duke and North Carolina and St. Peter's. But Kansas is coming into New Orleans, I think, as the most dominant team we've seen over the last month.
Yeah, they're the one remaining one seed left in the tournament. And what they did, I mean, Myron, I want to get into like what actually happened there, because Miami, to their credit, and yes, this is a huge deal for a team that was seeded 10th, but they were leading Kansas 45-39 at the half. And then Kansas just, they go on a 47-15 run. 47-15 to win by 26. What flipped at halftime?
My guess is Bill Self told them, we ain't losing to Miami. Like, you're not going to mess this up, okay? You all are not going to cost me another chance to win a championship. And I think they're that much better than Miami. And I think Kansas, when they turn it on with Remy Martin and David McCormick and Ochai Agbaji and all of the players they have, they're just better. And it just took them some time to get started and to get rolling. But I think they can do that to a lot of teams. Like, when Kansas gets on a run like that, they are very, very hard to stop. You know, it's all fun and games in the first half when you're kind of keeping it close or even you get a lead. But holding on to that lead is a whole different thing with a team like Kansas. My guess is Bill Self said, y'all want to get on that plane back home, you better make sure you win this game, because that's how they play.
Right. And again, another coach, a huge name coach who's accomplished a lot, but has a lot of pressure on him, right? They haven't won a national title at Kansas since 2008, right? That's the one and only title that Bill Self has won. And now, Myron, you mentioned a name that I love, a name that I love for so many different reasons, Remy Martin, yeah. A guy who I want to get drunk on because he is excellent and also because he is part Filipino.
Yeah.
And I just want to know, what did you see from him? Because that is a name that, because you're right, people have kind of ignored Kansas to this point. What does he do? How good is he?
Well, first off, where is the NIL deal?
I know.
For Remy Martin?
Like, I know. I mean, yeah, it's ridiculous.
It should happen. Here's what happened with Remy Martin. He was hurt for a chunk of the year. And then I think it just took him a long time to adjust. I talked to Bill Self over the summer. I was saying, how is Remy Martin doing? And he was saying he's having a hard time trying to figure out his role. And I think that's a very difficult thing. Remy Martin was an elite scorer at Arizona State for 2 years, averaged 19.1 points per game in back-to-back years. He gets to a team like Kansas, and I think he was trying to figure it out early in the season. Then he gets hurt with this bone bruise thing, and he never looks like himself. But I think now he's getting healthy, and he's comfortable, And I think it has just changed everything about this team. Averaging just under 17 points in the NCAA tournament. Like, to me, Remy Martin excelling right now would be like a good NBA team making a great trade at the deadline. Mm. Like, that's what you're getting out of Remy Martin. He changes everything about this Kansas team.
So if Kansas is acquiring a player, basically a star in Remy Martin, the opponent that they're going to face in the Final Four, Villanova, just lost somebody. And I'm going to get to that with you in a second here. But what they got, the Villanova Wildcats, Myron, what they got against Houston was seemingly just another piece of evidence that we all need to respect the career of, I mean, truly, just clearly one of the best coaches that we have, right? Like Jay Wright, what he's accomplished, Myron. I didn't have Villanova here in the Final Four. I mean, what's the takeaway that you had watching them take care of Houston on Saturday?
I mean, you know, if Jay Wright continues to win, if he wins his third title in 6 years, I think Jay Wright will be the next generation's Coach K. Mm. I mean, like, that's who he has been, but he's still here among the greats. You know, Roy just retired. Coach K's retiring this year. But he's one of the greatest coaches of all time already. I mean, I think that's just a team that plays a lot of disciplined basketball. That's just normal for Villanova. They don't have a Jalen Brunson, right? They don't have one of a Josh Hart, guys they've had in the past who've led them to championships. But it's just a good team overall. Colin Gillespie, you know, was a young guy on that 2018 championship team. Here he is in a fifth year leading this team back to the Final Four. But, man, you lose a Justin Moore.
Yes.
And that just kind of, you know, makes you go, man, can they still do it?
Yeah, so for people who need to be caught up on this, right? So Villanova beats Houston. And Houston, by the way, was favored in this game. Villanova beats them, but they do it at the cost of Justin Moore because he tore, it turns out, we know this now, his right Achilles tendon, Myron.
Yeah.
How important is Justin Moore to what this team has done and what's his absence going to feel like in the Final Four?
Well, he's their number two scorer. You know, he's a very key piece to what they do. There's no easy fix. You know, Jay Wright's going to bring in some reserves, including Chris Archidiakono, who's the brother of Ryan Archidiakono, who led that 2016 squad. But you can't really replace a guy like, you know, Justin right now. You just can't. He's too good. And I think Jay Wright kind of knows that. So they just got to play their best. He might move some guys around, but losing a player like that is a significant and tremendous loss for a Villanova team.
Right. And one of the things that Villanova has been leaning on all tournament that they're going to try and do, I presume, against Kansas is go to the free throw line.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, this team, I believe, Myron, they are the best shooting free throw team in NCAA history.
Yes.
Right now. How does this figure into how they play?
Well, I think they realize that if they can get into a close game with an opponent and it comes down to the free throw line, you know, they're going to continue to win in those situations. And they have, you know. But I also think going in shorthanded against a team like Kansas, that's a lot to ask.
Yeah.
You know, in 2018, that Villanova team was really, really good. And I believe they beat Kansas. It felt like by a million points. It could be the reverse this time with Kansas really pouncing on Villanova in this matchup.
Yeah, for people who haven't watched a ton of Villanova or Kansas, Myron, what should we be watching for in this particular matchup next weekend?
I mean, they're going to play a lot through Colin Gillespie. I mean, he does everything for them. He's the most important player on that roster. And they're just a really balanced team, you know? I mean, they're not – I don't think they're as good as 2016 and 2018 when they won national championships. But clearly they're still an excellent squad, top 20 adjusted offensive and defensive efficiency, which matters a lot. They didn't win the Big East, but – they finished really strong. They've lost one game since February 2nd, and they're just kind of excelling at the right time. It's tough to beat Houston. Like, that is a team that, in a grinded-out game, you pick Houston every time. Villanova found a way to win. It's hard to beat Michigan, and they found a way, you know, to get the win late. You beat Ohio State. You beat Delaware. Those are kind of those grinded-out games that Villanova can win. I think you need to be at full strength, though, to do some of those same things against a team like Kansas. But Colin Gillespie, I think, will try to control the game and hope that puts them in a position late to try to win.
So in New Orleans, we'll get Villanova in Kansas. We'll get Duke, Carolina. I mean, it is, Myron, kind of just poetic. Like, this is the tournament that is so predictably unpredictable. We got St. Peter's. We got these upsets. The brackets were all incinerated, basically, in your office pool by, like, 8 hours into day one. But here, for you, 20,000 words later, we wind up with the Blue Bloods, the four teams that we just discussed. That is, to me, like, kind of the opposite of what I figured. How did we get here?
Well, I think the easy thing to do when you see a St. Peter's or a UMBC is to say, oh, man, the game has changed forever. And we make a lot of grand assumptions when some of these runs happen. But here we are with four real blue bloods. I mean, Villanova's a blue blood now. Kansas, obviously, Duke and Carolina. And 10 years ago in that same building, the Superdome, the four teams were Kentucky, Kansas, Ohio State, and Louisville. So I think college basketball is still controlled by the haves, you know, more so than the have-nots. And in a tournament like this where I don't think we had a great team this year, so those teams that had the edge in talent have really found a way to win. Duke is doing it late. Obviously, North Carolina's finding a way. Kansas, Villanova. I mean, so these are all teams that coming into the year, if someone would have said they're going to be in the Final Four, you would have said, that makes a lot of sense to me. So the underdogs have been great storylines, but at this stage, it's usually the powerhouse teams, and that's what we're watching.
And it feels like you, Myron, as somebody who covers the game, it's like you're not necessarily missing the underdog at this point. You like the matchups that you got right now.
Yeah, I think people think they want upsets all the way through, and they really don't. You want upsets in the first weekend, and then you want the best teams to compete from the Sweet 16 forward.
Yeah. Byron, all I know is that as betting goes for me, I'm taking the over on whatever word count that Vegas gives me on your personal journalistic output here. So as always, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.